is the left asker versus
you. Yeah, you're on. I think you're good.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The boy and his father went to daven. The boy suggested to the father that they leave early to catch their bus, that they were going to an activity. The father didn't really want to leave davening early, and not only were they committed to davening, they came to daven at the earliest minyan possible. They davened vasikin. Vasikin is davening with the earliest possible moment. It could be that Rabbi Kay set it up already. You can see if it's actually working. So the son said to the father, let's leave right after Ashrei. We'll be sure to catch our bus. You know parenting today, it's not so simple. Our parents just said no to us, but we're not allowed to say that word today. Just no, flat out. Probably made a face like this. Anyway, they stayed. After davening, the boy was about 13 years old, finishing elementary school, going into high school. So after davening is over, one of his peers approaches him and they have a short conversation. The father's quiet and the son says, this is the conversation. It's really good we didn't leave davening early. The high school that I'm going to, you have to find your own chavrusa. And in the rush of things, I didn't find the chavrusa yet. This fellow told me that he found out where I lived, found out that I'd be davening at this early minyan, came to daven at the early minyan, and was hoping to speak to me afterwards to set up to see if I could be his study partner. So the father says, just imagine that. He's watching you the whole davening. He's watching how you daven. Had you left early, not only would you have lost the opportunity to get the chavrusa, he would have said, look, this kid leaves davening early. I don't want a chavrusa like that. Welcome, join us.
Good morning.
Good morning and welcome. So it's a powerful story brought by Rav Zilberstein and connects in some way to what we're going to talk about today. We're reading the story of in Chaye Sara, and these are the early parshiot, the early stories of the founding of the Jewish people. We know that the founding really happens in Shemos at Pesach time when we got to Egypt, and this is all the prelude, what happens before. And we read these stories, and some of them, please excuse me, could be on Jerry Springer. Stories of intrigue, families, and all types of unusual things. And there's a lesson here for us. There are lessons all over. And one of the themes, perhaps, that I'm trying to make meaningful to myself that I'm just sharing with you, is that it's all themes of struggle. It's all themes of, it doesn't look like it's going to turn out okay, but somehow the people have their faith in God and it turns out okay. It's almost as though the lesson that I'm trying to take into my own life at the stage that I'm at is we just have to keep on doing what we need to do. Our job is to look at Abraham, who in the words of Rav Gamliel HaKohen Rabinowitz, he had just left the near sacrifice of his son. He was through 10 tests in his life. And now my wife died. Another smack in the head. You just told me to do everything that I stand for not to do to kill my son. There is a commentary in last week's Parsha that the reason why Abraham said to Yishmael and the other people who accompanied him at the Akedah, he said to the words, Shavu lochem poi machamor. You here, sit with the donkey. So there's a few different explanations of what that means. One explanation is, he didn't want to model the wrong behavior. His whole life he said to them, you know, don't kill, don't serve Avodah Zarah, and there's one God, and God doesn't ask for us anything that relates to human sacrifice. And here, he's going to sacrifice his son, so he said, stay here. I don't want to look like a hypocrite. So, the point that we're going to bring out here in this first idea is that Abraham, like us, was tested so many times. And each of us is tested in our lives. Hopefully, it's not to do those drastic things. Hopefully, it's not to sacrifice somebody. Hopefully, it's not to be thrown into a fire. Hopefully, it's not to be told, you know, go, you're going to move. You're moving tomorrow. Just go. Just go somewhere. I'm going to tell you where to go. That's really what the Torah tells us God told Abraham, and these were his tests. We have our own tests. And our job is to say, yes, these are tests. How do we hold on to faith and to observance and to religion and to belief and to emunah during those tests? And perhaps the Torah tells us all of these stories to teach us that there were people who came before us who can. Who did. Our Uncle Abraham, our Aunt Sarah, and their children. So, Rav Gamliel says that there is a tremendous lesson to watch what happened to Abraham. Here he had come from the Akedah, and he has to negotiate for a plot. He explains that the amount of the price for the grave was 16 kilo of silver. That's 32 pounds? It's about 32 pounds?
35.
What?
35.
35. Wow. 35 pounds of silver. Then it was exorbitant. Today it's probably a lot of money. So Abraham could have turned to God and say, my wife died, according to Rashi, because of the Akedah. The Akedah, we might even address that if we have a minute or two. And now I have to spend an exorbitant sum to get the funeral director is holding me up to get a big plot. And you promised me the whole land anyway, so now I have to buy it? But that's not what he says. He just does what he has to do. And that, I think, is the point that Rav Gamliel is saying to us. That Abraham just stuck to the task. What is God asking me now, and what do I have to do? How do I stay to be Abraham, the father of the people? How do I stay with some level of trust? I don't understand why I have to negotiate with these people. And you look at the very fine language he used. He said, please tell Ephron, and if you please, and it says that he bowed. I'm a stranger, I'm a guest. He didn't come and say, you know, God did all these things to me. Abraham, the rabbis tell us, was a wealthy person. He was a person of influence. He was a person of royalty. He had an entourage. He had survived the war. And now he has to negotiate for it. Grave for his beloved wife. After he was leaving the Akedah and all the other. So Rav Gamliel says that this actually shows exactly who he is. The Torah calls him a Tamim. Tamim doesn't mean simple. It means that he was complete. We all have challenges. We all have issues. We all have difficulties. Some in our personal life, in our financial life, in our
Life's all around.
Everything is a test. I like an aisle seat. I travel a great deal. The past week I was on 5 planes and 3 trains. For me, an aisle seat is important. And I went up to the gate agent and I said, could you please do something to give me an aisle seat? She rips up my ticket and she does what she needs to do and she hands me back. And I should have noticed that 23D was an aisle. But I said to her, is that an aisle? So she smiles and she says, you know, every GD customer, but she doesn't say a GD, always asks me for the seat. I give it to them and they ask me, did you give it to me? And she says with a smile, I'm in front of you, in front of her like I'm in front of you. So I said to her, may I tell you what transpires in the head of the customer? And the gate agent next to her is looking to see, what am I going to say? She said, yes. I said, I deal with communication a lot. I asked you a question, you did what I asked you, but you didn't let me know that you did it. So the natural reaction is for me to say, did you do what I asked you? So the agent next to her says, I'm so glad you told her that, because she does it to everybody. You're the first one who told her. For me, that was a test. What are we doing in that situation? Am I just going to leave it alone, or am I going to say something to her?
Did you say, Phil, that you were reproving somebody, she needed to reprove?
Well, I smiled, and I asked the permission. I said, may I tell you what was going on in this communication? This happened in a split second, because you're on a line, and there are people waiting, and there's a lot happening. But for me, it was like a challenge to see. It was a test. Could I get across a message? I'm a customer. I asked you a question. Good, you did it. But say to me, here's your aisle seat. We're involved in tests all the time. They're not always as simple as that one. There's a challenge that comes all the time. From Avraham Avinu, who negotiated. He didn't get angry. He didn't say, listen, according to Rav Gamliel, the whole land is mine. I have to play around with these people and give them an exorbitant price? Let's think what it is to carry 35 pounds of anything. Let alone then when they said they'd cash, that was their cash. 35 pounds of silver. But he was focused on the project. What's the project? The project is that I have to follow God's will. The project is that I have to get this lady buried. That's my project right now. He didn't lose focus. We live in a world that everybody loses focus. They lose focus. They're off the issue. The issue is not whether or not healthcare is yes or no. The government is spending way too much more than it brings in. That is the issue. That's the focus. And they're all playing with the politics of the other stuff. The other stuff makes no difference. There is Obamacare. There isn't Obamacare. The computers do work. They don't work. You are spending more than you earn. That has to explode sometime. That is the issue. We're not focused. Because we have all these influences that draw us away from the focus. I was in the car last night. I heard Fox, I heard on the radio, Fox is doing an issue of showing places that the government spends money that it shouldn't spend. $25,000 on why people do things that they shouldn't do. Why bad people do things that they shouldn't do. It's probably trillions of waste. Nobody's focusing on the issue. Abraham Avinu focused on the issue. Yes, my feelings are I would rather not have to deal with this, but I'm going to do it. Then I'm going to stay Abraham. I'm going to stay Abraham because I have a picture in my head of what Abraham is. When we make a picture in our heads, what would I like to be as a Jew? No matter where I am. No matter where I am on the continuum, whether I know Shas or I'm just starting Aleph Beis. And we're all somewhere in the middle. What's my goal? What's my vision for myself? That's a lesson from Abraham. We all have the tests. We all have the difficulties. We all have the problem. Abraham, our forefather, said, yes, I have these tests, and now I got to negotiate with these people, and it's going to be a lot of money. It's a whole situation. And God, why did you do this to me? But I'm not focusing on that. I'm focusing on what I'm in control of. I'm in control of myself. And I want to stay Abraham the Ivri, Abraham the Jew. And And it takes tremendous mental discipline in a world where there's so much happening. There's so much happening to us. But the fact that we're here, we're sitting in this room, not at a matinee, means that we're looking to be on the project. We're looking to stay connected. And Torah is kind of what does it. So the first message that I'm looking to tell myself, which I'm just sharing with you, because I'm not nearly perfect in any of these things, is how do we stay focused? How do we learn from Abraham to keep the focus? And by example, he stayed on the project. He did not say, now she's dead, so now I have to go negotiate for her grave. He said, I'm going to do what I need to do, and I'm going to stay Abraham Avinu. And I'm going to stay in the project. This is borne out in another way. In the writings of Rav Henoch Leibowitz, the Chafetz Chaim Rosh Yeshiva of blessed memory, where he brings in his book on the end of the life of Abraham, that Abraham died, the Torah says, chapter 25, sentence 8, B'seiva tova, Zokein v'saveya. He was old and he was satisfied. By Yosef Elamov. The way the Torah records how these people died was that they went to their people. It's an expression today. You hear people say, my people. My people. So they went up to their people. So the Ramban says, what does it mean that he died, he was satisfied? So it says, he saw all of his, the desires of his heart fulfilled. And then the Ramban adds that the quality of righteous people is that they don't need more than they have. They don't want more. The rabbis say that a person passes away, they haven't fulfilled half of their desires. That means physical desires for money and for physical pleasures. But Abraham, his special quality was that he was okay with what he had. He was not a person who... The rabbis say a person has 100, they want 200. We always want more. Now that wanting more is, that narcissistic wanting more is good. That's what drives the world. There would not be a GE washing machine unless somebody wanted to figure out more. There wouldn't be a car that talks to you unless somebody wanted more. Well, that has a really good place. We would not have any of the inventions that we have unless somebody really wanted more. If drug companies didn't want money, we wouldn't have the drugs that are life-saving and preserving today. So that desire for more is good in balance. Related to Abraham, it says that he was satisfied. So the rabbi asks an obvious question. Let's look at who Abraham was. You tell me he was happy. He was satisfied. He had all the money in the world. He had an entourage of servants. He was a prince. He was noted in the world. This little prince was just christened. The grandson of the queen was just christened. He has everything. That kid will never be lacking anything. Why shouldn't Abraham be happy? He had the whole world at his disposal. So he answers something very, very... I'd also be happy if I had all that. So he answers because his stuff never got to him. He separated his stuff from himself. He was able to be satisfied with what he had. He was able to be happy. It was not his money or his power or his prominence that defined him. He was happy with who he was. He knew he had a set of challenges. Look, he waited 100 years to have a child. Circumcised himself at a very advanced age. He was happy with who he was. Our ability to be happy with who we are. And to learn from Abraham, yes, we have a particular DNA, we have a particular set of challenges, we have a particular set of situations. And it's our balance of doing what we need to do and relying on Hashem that brings us to the end. We're not supposed to say, okay, I'll cross the street and close my eyes and God will take care of me. At the same time, I'm supposed to think the opposite feeling. Every step that I take is from Hashem. And Abraham was happy in his own skin.
Yeah, in view of what you're saying, it's inspirational. I'm asking, you know, how was he able to do this? You know, you mentioned mission and goals, and I guess in 21st century talk, I mean, he, you know, he saw the place from, I'm afar. In other words, he always had the mission, he had the end in mind, to use the term. In other words, what's happening, you know, he sees, he knows he's bringing his son there, but he can see the place from afar. He sees it's going to be good, it's all from God, and he has this view, which that maybe that's what maybe we're lacking when we get cynical or negative or whatever. He wouldn't let it get them. He was in true mevakeshen. He had this, and what's going to happen, I'm going to pursue the truth, I'm going to live it no matter what happens. I'm not going to let anything throw me off course. I'm going to keep that focus. You think that's it?
Absolutely what you're saying. We live in a world that is not this idea. We live and function in a world that is not based on all these God-fearing ideas. You got questions, we got answers. Yesterday, those hearings, they're discussing what happened there. I heard it all on the radio. I was traveling, I had a long time in the car. We want answers, which we deserve, up in the government part. Our religious life and our relationship to Hashem is not one where there's always answers. There are sometimes many more questions than there are answers. Abraham had many questions. What do you mean you tell me now all of a sudden the only son you gave me now that destroyed him? It doesn't mean he didn't have questions, but it didn't mean that he was mechanical either. But he realized there is a system that I don't totally understand. My only hope is to have faith and trust and to try to keep doing what's right. What's the rule? What is the halacha? That's why the rules play the role that they do. Because it's keeping the rules. The rules keep us straight. The rules keep us on target. The rules keep us doing what we're supposed to do, even when we don't feel totally good. Like the story with the kid. He stayed. The father wanted him to stay and daven the whole rest of the davening. Not to lose those en brachos, Yeshua Rabba and Aleinu and the Kaddish and all those things that you get from the end of davening. Keep the rules. Stay in the whole davening. Don't worry about the bus. We'll catch the bus. We're going to do what's right, and whatever's supposed to happen else will happen. That it's keeping the focus, like you said, keeping the vision. We often have ideas that there's compromise. Maybe we should compromise. It leads us really to the other point about Abraham, a very fascinating idea. Again, so our first idea was that, from Rav Gamliel, that Abraham could have been very disappointed that now he has to buy the grave and he has to do all this negotiating. It's another blow, and now he has to do all this negotiating. But he stayed Abraham. He stayed a man of character and integrity. And he said, okay, what's my job? My job now, of course I'm going to feel the loss of my wife, but I'm going to focus on the project. And the project is getting this grave, because this is the grave that's going to be the grave for my children too. There were 8 couples buried in that little cave. So it was him and Zara, and it was Adam and Eve, and his child and his grandchild. So he was looking at eternity, not feeling what he could have been feeling, the withdrawal. So we too, we're challenged in the moment. How do we look at eternity? What's right? What's good? What's the rule? Despite what I'm feeling about what I'm going through. This could be a challenge every day of just out getting up and going to daven in the morning. It doesn't have to be a huge test. It can be getting up and going to daven. It can be going to learn. It can be any other test that we have. Not saying Lashon Hara. Keeping the mitzvos at whatever level we are. It's our personal struggle. Abraham had this huge struggle. So if we're just to interpolate and to extrapolate down to our struggle. And everybody has their personal struggle and their personal issue that they know that they are dealing with. But it's how did he keep focus? He kept focus by being Abraham. And that was how he was remembered for generations. Another example of this is that in a very striking medrash, so we're told in the sentence, chapter 25, sentence 5, that Abraham gave everything he had to Yitzchak. So it's an open statement. What exactly does that mean? So the Medrash explains that he didn't give him blessings. And it's really unusual to hear why and to hear what's going on. It says rather he gave him presents. It means his wealth. He gave over his fortune. So the Medrash goes through an entire discussion as why he didn't bless Yitzchak. Why did he give the blessings? He was the holder of the blessings. Why didn't Abraham give the blessings to Yitzchak? So the Medrash gives a very striking analogy for us to understand, a metaphor for us to understand. And it goes something like this. There was a king who had a garden, and he gave the garden over to somebody to tend it. And in the garden there were two trees. A tree that had poison and a tree that had the medicine for life. And the trees were intertwined. So the caretaker of the garden wasn't sure what to do. If I feed the trees, so the tree for life lives and the tree for death lives. The thing that gives things that kill people. So which tree am I supposed to nurture? I have this question. If I feed one, the other also is fed. If I feed good, then evil gets fed. If I starve good, so good gets starved. So this is what was going on in the mind of Abraham. And it's also a very tremendous lesson for us. Abraham said, if I give the blessings to Yitzchak, I'm going to be causing tzar, I'm going to be causing pain to the other children, Yishmael. I'll be causing pain to my son Yishmael. I'm not allowed to cause anybody pain. I'm not going to give the blessings to anybody. It's God's problem. God put me in this world not to cause anybody pain, not to cause anybody tzar, not to cause any difficulty. And if I do something that causes somebody else pain, even though, according to the rest of the talk, I'm saving the Jewish people. Abraham was giving over the lesson, giving over the blessings to Isaac, who was his son, and he's saving the Jewish people. Let the blessings be in the hand of the good guys. Abraham said, no, that is not my job. My job is not to save the world. My job is to do what's right. And if doing something, I'm causing somebody else sorrow, somebody else pain, I'm not going to do it. It's God's world. And the idea that's being brought out is here that sometimes people compromise. They say, oh, I'm going to save it. I'm going to do something now that I'm not supposed to do to have a good outcome. And he's trying to bring out that our job is not to save the world. That job is to do what we're supposed to do right now. It's God's world, and he's going to be responsible for it. Our job is to do the intermediate right steps that are the right steps to do now. And that's also a lesson from Abraham. He did not give the blessings to Yitzchak, because giving the blessings to Yitzchak would have caused a problem to others, a pain and a tzar. And our job is not to cause any pain and sorrow to anybody. Our job is to fortify others. Our job is to make others feel uplifted. And if we do something, even if it's for the sake of good, that's going to cause a pain and a tzar, we don't do it. The ends do not justify the means. Everything has to be in line what it's supposed to be. He proves it again with, he gives another example that says that there was a question as to whether or not it was modest, it was in the interest of Tznius for Eliezer to run over to Rivka. Eliezer, the servant of Abraham, when he ran over to Rivka, that it was not, it went through his head, it's not modest for me to run over to her. It's not appropriate for me to run over to her. So you could say, well, what are you worrying about that modesty for? Your job is to go get the wife. Your job is to go do what you were sent to do. And he explains that, yes, but not in a way that was immodest. it would be better for me not to find a wife than to do something I'm not supposed to do. My job is to follow the rules. My job is not to break the rules in order to get to the end. If the rule is that it's not modest for me to run over to her, then I'm not going to run over to her. Even if it means I'm going to lose the whole deal, I'm going to lose the whole shidduch. This is the point that he was giving. He was ready to lose the whole shidduch, not to violate the halacha.
Rabbi, I'm trying to bear with this. But it is bothering me.
Please.
Well, the truth of the matter is, you see, pain in the past is no longer pain. But stupid concepts that are given over to a person, they'll bear them maybe forever. All right?
Excellent question.
The problem really comes down. We always have to weigh the benefit versus the downside.
Ah.
And we're weighing it. But nonetheless, if the downside incurs, the person incurs a small amount of pain. Pain is a question of degree. It's not of kind. Everything that when you reproved that woman, you gave her a little bit of pain. And sure, she wasn't appreciating. Later, she did. Perhaps I hope she did. But the truth is, she had to incur some pain to hear this truth from you, and you can't just back off from that. So I think that this is one of the bigger problems in life. If we could master this, we would be really tzaddikim.
You're raising an excellent point. The question is, do the rules tell us what to do? You see, that's the point. The question is, am I allowed to break one rule to get another end? That's the question. This isn't so much about feelings, it's about the rules. Eliezer was thinking, according to what I'm reading, what's the rule? See, there are rules that drive our behavior. And what's the rule? And if there's a rule that tells me not to do what I'm supposed to do, then I'm not supposed to do it. And that's kind of the guideline.
So he could have been, who knows what he could have been what they call a chassid shoko, right?
Right.
He could have incurred that foolishness. But, you know, in his, we know retrospectively, perhaps he knew better. But how did he know better? I mean, he could have cut this thing down to a micrometer.
Excellent. Okay.
There's a boundary which was crossed, and I don't know the people. I don't even know the greatest tzaddikim in the world know when the boundaries are crossed at the micrometer level.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. It might be the response to what you're saying. There's a rule, and if we follow the rule, so it says that Eliezer found a way that did not violate Tznius to go to her. So if we find a legal way to do it, then it's okay to do it. There are legal ways to get things done, and we can find a legal way, okay, we can think about it. If we find the legal way to get it done, then it's okay to do it. But the bellwether of whether or not we're supposed to do it is illegal. What do the rules say? That makes it objectively observable and not subjective. If I was right in that situation, but I was violating the rules with this lady, then I was wrong. She needs to learn the lesson, but I'm not supposed to violate the rules in order to do it. I don't know that the rules apply out of that case.
How do you decide where the boundary is between the pain and the benefit to the woman? How did you decide? Can you share that?
Sure.
How did you know that?
I said, may I?
All right.
Had she said, no, I don't want to hear it, then I would have stopped it. It was also how I came across to her. I'm not a supervisor. I'm not her boss. I'm not her job. There were no rules here. There were just the rules of interpersonal. And if I want to say something to you, I need to ask. I need to say, may I? And who am I to give this lady a reproof? Our only relationship is that she gives me a ticket. Everything I did was really extra. I had no obligation. It was my interest in the interaction, the human interaction, that caused me to want to do it. And I think that in that case, I don't know that there's a rule involved other than I have to look and see, well, is really that my role? She can say, listen, what do you tell me what to do? So let's go to a case where there are rules involved, okay? Let's say with Lashon Hara.
Well, talking to women is certainly a minefield. I mean, I don't know, the rules, it's like, you know, saying where's the beginning of the storm and where is the end of the storm?
Yes.
sometimes if you ask for permission, may I, the person says yes, and then a minute later when you actually tell them, they get very offended or act defensively, so sometimes that can be make trouble. Yeah.
This case that I told you was not a case of the rule. Maybe it wasn't a perfect, example.
It was a terrific example.
Yes,
it was a terrific example.
It was a good example of how I felt that I was in a test. Now, it was self-imposed. I could have just taken it. That was about human interaction, human communications.
We have that every day. Whenever,
yes.
Every day, several situations.
Yes. I think here we're talking about in the case of the rabbi's words is, do we ever? How do we look at the ends and justify the means? You know, we want to correct somebody else. We want to fix something. He's saying that Abraham was ready, chose not to give the blessings to Isaac, because he said that's going to violate some other rules. So it's our, we should process this. We should look at it and say, where are the rules? Are there rules involved? We're supposed to finish at 12?
Yes.
It's okay. Five more.
Okay, because I have just one story for us to end with, which might bring us together. But I very much appreciate your comments. I want to think about it, and I think, you know, we all will. We're all left with this question. How do we act in our lives? How do we bring the lessons from the past down? And when are we in a situation when we have a dilemma between the ends and the means?
The problem that I was bringing up was, you see, you're putting it in rules of time. And I'm saying rules often have degrees.
That's
the problem. If it was just you can't, and that never is the case. There's money could be a 10 cents or money could be $10,000.
Right.
One is a totally different entity than the other.
Right.
You see, so you can't just say that it's a rule. You do this, you don't. In that case, you know, I mean, it's usually there's a price, and it's on a long continuum.
These are things that beg us to think. If it gets us to think, how am I serving Hashem better? Then I think we're doing well. I want to say that the work that you do, people are trusting you. People are taking the pain that you're giving them really to make them better. You see, there, you're the authority. And you are employed to cause people pain to help them. And the rule is that they're supposed to listen to you. So I don't think.
Tomato.
What? Human beings. The challenge of the human beings. And they probably come back to you because you're nice to them, because you're kind to them. You give them tough love. Here we're talking about a different type of rules, the rules of God. You see, you are empowered. You are empowered. And we often, many of us are empowered in our work. And we have to ask ourselves, is this within our realm? Is it not within our realm? But you are definitely empowered to cause people pain in order to help them. And that's why they come to you. So, the closing story that also brought in the words of Rav Zilberstein, there was a man, he had a Seder every day, and he had a 30-minute Seder every single day. And he had a big appointment. And he said, you know, I'm not going to have the Seder. I'm going to go to my appointment. It's a big financial deal. And he told his Harusa, I want you to know, without learning today, I have a big appointment that I have to go to. So he gets to the appointment. And the appointment is 30 minutes late. So he said to himself, you see, I really should have had the Seder. I could have had the Seder. I should have said to the appointment, I will come later. I'm not assigning it a value. Just showing how people are reflective. I may have shared with you years and years ago, I davened in Young Israel, and I thought I'm going to do my wife a favor. Here, this is the ends justify the means. How I myself thought, oh, I'm going to leave davening early. My wife wasn't feeling well. I had to get the kids ready for school. And I left davening early, probably after Kiddushah. It's at the time that Rabbi Sherman had his shul where the dentist is now. Rabbi Sherman is standing out there in a talus and tefillin, sees me driving, he points to me and says, we need a minion. So I said to myself, You think you're going to leave early. God sake, do you know? You're not leaving early. Come and stay. Come home late today, because now they need a minion. Don't leave. Don't make excuses for yourself. Don't think you can go. You got to stay at the whole davening.
Beautiful.
Good Shabbos. Have a wonderful week.
I don't know all the times you've been burned when you didn't listen, take care of your wife first.
Is there a
No, no, wait, no.